Okay, good morning, everybody. That sound, that Hawaiian music means it's Saturday. It's time for our next broadcast of Radio Top Tropicals, where we are here to answer all of your Top Tropicals questions, as well as giving you good information on a variety of topics. Just a little homework. You can visit our site at Mixlr.com. That's Mixlr.com/Top Tropicals. You can listen to our broadcast live on our Mixlr site. You can find our previous episodes for download and listening. Also, you can call us at our studio, 239-887-3323. Again, that's 239-887-3323. Our helpful studio staff will make sure your question gets live on the air. Today we are discussing Let Your Plants Go to Pot. We will be discussing containerized gardening, bonsai, and a lot of other topics. And to introduce our topic is our own certified weed specialist, Robert Reefer. Robert, take it away.
Thank you very much. Many of the customers here at Top Tropicals live up north, where water tends to freeze into a solid product, you know, good old ice and snow. Most of these plants cannot withstand these cold temperatures. Therefore, we recommend that you get yourself the appropriate size pot and move them in. The pots, of course, come in many shapes and sizes, from terracotta, which means from the earth, all the way to plastic pots as well. The containerized gardening can be very enjoyable and tend to have less weeds in them. The main plants that can be potted up are your little small ornamentals, such as frangipana, your jasmines, your small dwarf fruit trees, and the like. So you can actually have a tropical garden in your living room with pots. And the use of pots in gardening can be quite enjoyable.
Well, Robert, this is an interesting topic, because I think not only for cold weather climates, but a lot of people who maybe don't have the space in their backyard, apartment, condominium dwellers, can they do the same kind of thing with a container garden, even if they do live in, say, a warmer climate?
Yes, absolutely. Just because you live in an apartment or a small condominium doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the benefits of having a nice garden as if you had some acreage on hand. So we recommend containerized gardening. Now, there are a couple of pitfalls. Number one is the humidity level in your household. And I would actually recommend, just for people in a comfort level, that they check and see exactly what the humidity is in their home. Bearing in mind that as far as energy efficiency is concerned, it's a lot easier to both heat and cool dry air rather than air that is exceptionally humid, because then you're literally just trying to heat or cool water, which is extremely difficult.
Okay, so we're going to get this question regularly throughout the show and in past episodes, so we're going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Robert, and let's give our listeners and the people that are going to listen to the rebroadcast, let's give them a couple ideas on, let's start with maybe tropical plants, maybe flowering, maybe edible, maybe some herbs and spices. We had some episodes talking about that. How about three or four ideas for Robert's container garden?
Okay, one of the ideas that I find very, very enjoyable is to get yourself one of these yams or sweet potatoes. Place it in a glass or container that is, of course, watertight, and allow the vines to climb around your kitchen window. This can be most enjoyable and adds a nice touch of color to your kitchen. In addition, there are many fine plants, such as the tea plant, Camellia sinensis, which is where we get our drinking tea from. You can actually have fresh green tea by growing your tea plants in actually indoors. And if you don't like tea, coffee will also flower and bear in, say, about a 7-gallon pot. The main thing to be certain of, though, is that you make sure there is just enough water for your potted plant, as well as what the humidity level in the house is. Many a time, the humidity levels in a home can be as low as 15%. To calibrate this, basically the Sahara Desert has a humidity of 30%, or twice the level. So many people, in actuality, are keeping their homes a little bit too dry. This can cause cracked skin and the like. So take a look at the humidity in your household. Generally, if you are uncomfortable, your plants are uncomfortable.
Okay, so great start. We have a yam, which will have a growing vine, some tea options, coffee options. How about a mango? Is there a dwarf mango that our listeners could put in a containerized garden?
Indeed there is. And if you go to our Top Tropicals website, we have several varieties which yield themselves quite well to potting. Now, the other problem that you can experience by having a plant in the home is the lack of proper and necessary light. This is very easy to correct. Believe it or not, you want to have LED lights, light emitting diodes, both red and blue. You see, in the process of photosynthesis, where the chlorophyll converts the sunlight into energy, plants are green because they reflect green light, which is basically at the middle of the spectrum for our eyesight. So you actually want the red and the blue light for your plants. And many LEDs are available. They last for literally thousands of hours and are exceptionally cheap to operate as far as electrical costs are concerned.
Excellent. So mango is an option. Now, a question that comes up often is you start a containerized garden, maybe with one of the selections we're suggesting. When do you know if it's time to move that plant into a larger container?
Well, when your plant threatens to quit paying the rent, you know it's time to move it into a larger pot. Many times, if you're having to water it on a daily basis, yet it's still drying out, if you take a look and see that the roots are growing out of the pot and or they're starting to circle the pot, then it's time to start growing it into something larger. Bear in mind, however, that with using the soil in the pot, that the soil has an average weight of about 10 pounds per gallon. So you can basically come up with a pot so big that you can't lift it. So try for plants that are small. Lemongrass is one of the most excellent herbs that will yield quite well to pot culture. In addition, the frangipana is quite easy. This can be placed in a 1 or even 2 gallon pot and grown. There are also many perennial herbs that will work as well in your containerized garden. Mint, for instance, your spearmints, and many of the other plants in the family Labiatae.
Excellent. So a lot of good ideas there. Now, we just spoke about a mango. And a question that came in is, how long can I keep my 7-gallon mango in a 7-gallon pot? Sounds like a country song.
Yeah, and don't forget, you want to put your mango in, if it's starting to overgrow your 7-gallon pot, into a 10-gallon pot and not a 10-gallon hat. The indicators will be that the plant is drying out far too quickly. It is very hard to water. You will see the leaves droop. They may even begin to fall off. So at that time, you do need to seek a better pot. In addition, as important as the pot is, making sure that there is proper drainage in the bottom. You don't want to waterlog and kill your plants. Therefore, I recommend a large enough saucer or container to take up any of the excess water. You can even get fancy, get yourself some wheels, and have it to where you can make this large plant mobile.
Excellent. And here's a question that I have for you, Robert. The saucers underneath your containers, the excess water drips into that. Is that when you know it's time to stop watering?
Not really, because many of the soil mixtures are extremely porous. You can basically judge that it's about a 20-to-1 ratio. In other words, if you have a 10-gallon pot, a half a gallon of water should basically fill the mix in there. And with the pots, whether it's terracotta, which yields more readily to evaporation than the plastic pots, so it's dependent on the species of plant, the particular soil or soil mixture it is placed in, as well as the conditions in your household. You really have to experiment with it to get it just right. However, this is part of the fun in gardening. And don't forget, you're not an expert gardener until you've killed at least your first 20 plants. I've been an orchidist for 40 years, and we all say that you're not a good orchid grower until you've gone through 1,000.
I like it. That's a good rule of thumb. Earlier, we talked about some edibles in your container garden. A question has arrived regarding potatoes. Can you grow potatoes in a pot?
Generally, I cook my potatoes in a pot. I add a little bit of cabbage, some ham. But yes, indeed, you can grow potatoes in a pot. Incidentally, one of the finest ways of being able to grow potatoes, and one thing I would recommend, is if you can find either PVC or plastic that's large enough, as the potato plant grows, you keep adding soil and raising the level of the pot so that you can get it chock full of the delicious tubers. So yes, potatoes can be grown in a pot. However, bear in mind that your potato plant does want quite a bit of sunlight, so bringing it inside can tend to be somewhat of a hassle.
Okay, and last couple episodes we talked about feeding and caring for your plants. Now, in a containerized pot or garden, how does that differ? How should our listeners feed and weed and control their plants?
Okay, as far as watering is concerned, once again, make sure that you don't have the water flowing all over the living room carpet. Try to keep at least enough water so the plant is not wilting. Insofar as fertilizer is concerned, I recommend very light doses. Do not use exceptionally heavy doses, because this can cause salt accumulation in the pot. You'll start to see the soil mixture get little white crystals on it. Don't forget, fertilizer is a salt, such as potassium chloride. So you want to be very, very careful. bear in mind, most people overfeed their plants. And I have found as a CCA, 95% of all problems in agriculture even are either over or under watering, as well as under or over fertilization. And it tends to be on the overboard scale. Most people provide too much water and fertilize far too heavily for the plant, and to a detriment of both their pocketbook and to the detriment of the plant itself.
Okay, and I know in past episodes we always talk a little bit about our sunshine in a bottle product. How can our listeners use that for containerized gardens, and how much should they use and how often?
Okay, our sunshine product is a natural steroid, and as such, it is a growth stimulator. The full directions as far as mixing is concerned is on the label. We tell you to use only distilled water. Do not use a water source from your tap, especially if you live in Flint, Michigan. And make sure that the mixture is used at that time. In other words, mix up just enough for that one time that you want to fertilize your plants. Now, insofar as the sunshine product, when to use, we find that most plant growth stimulators, say that three times fast, are best at about every 3 weeks. I've seen both in ornamental horticulture, home gardening, as well as agriculture, that the three-week period tends to be a good time, because if you put the growth stimulator more often, you'll get a buildup, and once again, this will make your plant go south.
Okay, and help us a little with fertilizers. We talked about some of the problems of over or under fertilizing. Is there a good use for a time-release fertilizer, whether it be outdoors or even in your containerized garden? Any thoughts on the slow-release fertilizers?
Yes, you do have to be careful, though, with slow-release fertilizers. One of the major examples is down here in Southwest Florida, we have the joke of what's going to hit 100 first, the temperature, the humidity, or the wind speed. So basically, what happens is if you get too much water and too much heat, this causes the fertilizer to have a tremendous dumping into the soil. So this causes over-fertilization. Now, in the home environment, you should hopefully not have this problem. Once again, realize this. Who's fertilizing all these plants down in the Amazon? There is, of course, natural fertilizer that, believe it or not, the Amazon basin in South America is actually fertilized by African dust, which brings phosphorus into the area. So fertilizing is actually a global process. But these particularly your nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium actually are fertilized throughout the world through the tropical convergence zone. So go very, very lightly on the fertilizer. And don't forget, you have the three phases or two phases of gardening. The first phase is, will the plant live? The second phase is, quick, kill it before it multiplies. Down here in Florida, you can basically plant a broomstick and it will grow. So don't over-fertilize. We do sell fertilizer here, but we want you to be happy with the product. In addition, I would recommend that you first buy some of the Sunshine product, see how it's doing, and then calibrate the fertilizer for that. I tend to fertilize at about 50 to 100 parts per million, which is basically one-third to one-sixth of the label recommended rates that you see out there.
Well, that's helpful advice. Can save some money on that as well. Now, we have a question on the same topic regarding the micro element mix that we offer here at Top Tropicals. The question is how often our listeners should use it on fruit trees, but maybe you can talk about other plants as well and the benefits and use of that micro element mix.
Okay, micro elements are basically vitamins for the plants almost. Once again, as with your fertilizer, use it frequently, but at a rate that would be maybe one-fifth to one-tenth of what the standard labels incur. Now, we adjust for this, so follow the label directions that we provide with the microelement mixtures, and you'll be okay. Bear in mind, plants are very, very different. What works for one plant may not work for another plant. In addition, plants are like individuals. Some are big, some are small. And you really have to experiment with it. And this is what will make you a fantastic gardener. Learning what your plant likes, learning what your plant dislikes.
Excellent advice. This topic started where we're talking about some of our neighbors to the north that want to grow these plants and then move them inside for the winter. One of the questions we received is, when I move my potted plants in for the winter, they all lose their leaves. Is there a way to stop this from happening?
Okay. Number one, be sure your plant is getting enough light. And you can do this, as I've stated earlier, with the LEDs. Both use the red and blue LED lights. And the electrical cost will be nominal for you. Also, make sure that the plant is getting enough water. And fertilize very sparingly during these winter months. You're really not trying to get a pile of growth on this plant during that period of time. Also, be aware of the natural cycles of plants. I remember one time a old Florida boy coming to me and showing me on one side was a property that was full of Valencia orange trees, and the farmer would fertilize every 3 months. The other farmer would fertilize about once a year only. So give your plants a proper, what we call, rest period. I grew at one time one particular orchid into a 100-gallon pot. As soon as Thanksgiving came along, I would cut off all water, I would cut off all the fertilizer, and I would wait until just before spring, late February, when I would then super feed it, super water it, and eventually this orchid grew into a 100-gallon pot and had over 7,000 flowers.
That's awesome. Impressive. Let's offer some options for our listeners for houseplants. And in specific, a question has come in for a fragrant houseplant. Do you have two or three choices that might work for these containerized gardens?
Yes, we have Brunfelsia, which is very, very fragrant. You can find this on the Top Tropicals website. And in addition, there are jasmines. As far as other fragrance is concerned, we even have small dwarf gardenias that you can use and place in a pot.
All right, three excellent choices. Now, a question from a listener regarding the Piper nigrum. The question is, how long can he expect it to take for that plant to flower and bloom in a 3-gallon pot?
In a 3-gallon pot, we have actually seen where, and occasionally, they are already flowering and already fruiting in a pot that size. And one other interesting thing, when it comes to flowering and fruiting, don't forget, this is the plant having sex. And a way to get your plant to flower and fruit is to occasionally stress it out. There's the old humorous tale of, if you want an orchid or other plant to flower, give it to a friend. This is because your friend has different cultural conditions than you have, and this causes a little bit of stress on the plant. So stress basically causes sex, and of course sex causes stress. It's a vicious cycle.
It sounds like a video I watched last week. We have time for a couple more questions, but before we move on, I just want to remind everybody about our special sale, the Cinco de Mayo. It's going on through tomorrow, Monday, end of day, and a code that you can use to receive 15% off your order is 5May15. That's 5May15. Only restriction is your order is a $50 minimum before shipping and handling, and it's a 15% off discount coupon, 5May15. Okay, moving on for a quick few questions. Here's a great one. I know this comes up all the time. What pots are better for fruit trees, the plastic or the clay? Any advantages or disadvantages to those choices?
Okay, with your clay terracotta pots, you will get quite a bit of evaporation, so you may have to water it more. In addition, even though the South won the Civil War, because you see where they're manufacturing cars nowadays, not in Detroit, the plastic pots tend to overheat quite a bit. The fact that we do have plastic pots that are dark or black in color is really not that good for a plant. I would actually prefer to see white on that to reflect the light. Remember, you want to keep your roots cool and you want to keep your leaves warm, because this will cause what is known as evapotranspiration in the plant. In other words, the plant's sucking up the water through the roots, and it's releasing it through the leaves. So by having a cool soil temperature and a hot top for the plant, this will cause the good old photosynthetic engine to run a little faster. There are even examples of some of these cold-growing plants, like in South Africa, or even California, where the plant is actually watered through melted snow, yet at the top of the plant, it can be 85 degrees.
I like it. Easy to remember. Keep the roots cool and the leaves warm. Robert, thank you for your help today. Now, next week, we're discussing weeds like to help. How about you introducing our show for next week?
Yes, it's Weeds Like to Help, where we discuss all kinds of weeds, your weed problems. We investigate various methods of controlling weeds. Dr. Ramdas Kanasari of the University of Florida was due to appear next week. However, we've still got to get our blog and website up. So this will be in another few months. Till then, I will be filling in on that subject. But it'll be jam-packed with information and will hopefully save you both money and aggravation with controlling weeds, and how to basically eliminate the weed without eliminating yourself.
Excellent. I look forward to that show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, you can catch our rebroadcast on the Mixlr site. Also, our Facebook site has links to all of our previous shows. Tell your friends, and don't forget to sign up with our newsletter online at toptropicals.com. And lastly, two more days left, I guess, in our Cinco de Mayo sale, using code 5MAY15 for 15% off your order. Thank you, everybody, and we will listen to you and hear you next week.